Yeah, I don't think I want to leave there.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to leave there.
I like that thing.
That deal with the salad on that solid waste. What we're talking about in Nebraska. Oh, okay.
Overheard.
Okay.
I can't figure out, I got a motion here to adopt resolution 16, and down here's another motion to adopt 16.
Same thing, isn't it? I noticed that too. Did you want Kim to sit here?
What?
Did you want Kim here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like you.
Okay. If you have any questions, I won't be able to answer. Like she can.
Yeah, that's true.
We're waiting for agendas.
Here he comes, old man.
Here they come.
Do you guys need any?
You guys got
it? I want one.
We have.
I got all. That's what I'm going to watch. I don't know where I do, but thank you. Correct. Okay, thank you.
About 15 more.
For anybody that needs an agenda? Anyone in the audience need an agenda?
No.
Okay. Is your recorder on? Before you sit down, we'll call the meeting to order. Just stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. A current copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back of the south wall of this room between the two windows and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. Would you call the roll, please?
McNear?
Yes.
Goldman?
Here.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
Bousquet is absent.
Bousquet is asked to be excused. He's out of town.
So moved to excuse Bousquet from the meeting today.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to excuse Commissioner Bousquet. Call the roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNeil?
Yes.
Next is to approve the minutes of the previous Board of Corrections meeting. They were provided to you earlier.
So moved to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Seconded.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous Board of Corrections. Any corrections, additions, or deletions to the minutes? Call roll.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNear?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kern, we'll entertain your report, please.
Okay, we had an upturn in activity for last month. As you can see, that the number of county inmates remained at about where it advanced at 73, but we had an upswing in federal inmates to 41. And our total in-house population went to 114, which is above what it had been in the calendar year and for the fiscal year. Total federal income was $85,568, second month in a row we've been in the 80,000 category. That brought our calendar federal income to $529,000 and our fiscal to $166,000. Our per diem inmate costs dropped back into the 50s, we're at $50.02. And our federal jail income for the first 2 months of this calendar, fiscal year, is $41,000 higher than the same time last year. We've completed 17% of the fiscal year, 16.6% to be exact, and we've spent 16.6 of what we believe would be our authorized budget. One of our new correctional officers did not make probation, but the others are completing the basic jail standards training this week.
Questions for Terry? Any questions on the report? Any questions on the jail? Okay. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Good report. Thank you, Terry.
Miscellaneous agenda items? None. Board committee reports on the jail? None. Public comment, reference to the jail. Anyone in the audience wish to address this board on any issue connected with the jail? Seeing nobody approach, No emergency business, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded to adjourn. Let's call a roll.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McClary?
Yes. Okay, we still have a few minutes till 4:10 before we start the commissioner meeting.
Yeah. Okay. All I know is I got a deal at home that's got an answering machine.
We'll call this meeting to order. It's now 4:10. A current copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back on the south wall of this room between the two windows and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. Would you call the roll, please?
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
Buske is absent.
Commissioner Buske has asked to be excused.
So moved. Excuse Commissioner Buske from the meeting today on the fact that he's traveling and he can get back in time.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to excuse Commissioner Buske. Call roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Okay, you were all provided a copy of the minutes of the August 23rd meeting. What is your pleasure?
Move to approve.
Second it.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the August 23rd meeting. Any additions, corrections, deletions? Call roll.
McClary?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. At this time, Mr. Ellison is here. Okay, we're going to open this up for kind of a public comment period. Do you care to come up here, or would you rather sit there and listen?
I do.
Your choice.
Yeah,
I do. You're all, okay. So when you come to make a presentation, I wish you would face this wall so we can hear you up here and they can hear you back there rather than direct it all up here. Okay? So this is kind of a public input meeting. I'm going to say that if you're speaking for the entire group, we'll give you a maximum of 5 minutes. If you're speaking as an individual, 3 minutes to say what you have to say If you're repeating the same thing somebody else has said, I'm going to ask you to sit down. We want to make this short but very concise but very definite. Okay? So is there anyone here that would like to speak on behalf of the group, the total group? All right, so I assume that there's no spokesman, so with now we'll go to individuals. If you are an individual and you want to speak, please come up here, give us your names and address, and spell your last name so the clerk can get it correctly in the minutes. Okay? Who would like to address the issue first? Everybody's kind of wondering what the issue is?
Yeah.
Oh, you'd like, well, I'd be happy to point that out to you. Mr. Ellison is here to hear comments in reference to Millis Beach about the road blockage by the railroad, and you have spoke to us a number of times. We have contacted Mr. Ellison. I shouldn't say we, I should say Officer Walsh has, and so he, after talking to Deputy Walsh, agreed to come up here and hear your concerns personally. So please direct whatever you have to say. This is about the Millis Beach, blockage of the road. Direct them to both of us up here and to Mr. Ellison and his crew. Okay? Who would like to address this issue first? You're well aware of our customary 3 minutes. Okay?
Susan Church, C-H-U-R-T-H.
Can you hear back there, Mr. Ellison? Okay.
Okay, my understanding was that we were here to hear what the railroad has to say why they are blocking the exit going, entrance and exit. And since that 2.5 hour deal 3.5 weeks ago, we have had many half hour incidents where it has blocked it 45 minutes up on the highway and our place. The school bus has not been able to get in. Kids are sitting there waiting. Which, you know, the weather's fine now. Winter time, this isn't going to cut it. We have to solve this problem. I don't know if, I haven't talked to these railroad people, if they don't understand that they are blocking our only way in and out, if they know that we're like a cul-de-sac. I don't know if they know the area, if they've even been out there and seen the area, if they've studied the area, and I feel like basically we're whistling in the wind when they haven't been up to tell us their side so that we can tell our side.
Okay.
And we do have a safety issue because we have had, I'm not going to mention any names because I don't know the name, a guy that went between the cars to get into our place because he'd been waiting and waiting, went in and waited 2 hours for the train to move and then come out and move his car. Going in between those cars, those railroad cars, is a big, big safety issue. If this had happened up at the plant, you'd get fired for doing something like that. You never know when it's going to move.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Church. I would point out that, as it was pointed out to us by Deputy Walsh, the county has no authority, and I don't believe the state does either, over the railroad. Is that correct, Mr. Ellison?
That's correct.
We cannot force them to do anything. Only the federal has control over the railroads. I believe that's correct. But we want you to express your feelings about this. They can carry it back and maybe we can get some action out of it. Okay? Is there anyone else who would like to address the board? If you have an issue, please get up and say it now. Your name, sir, address, and spell your last name.
My name is Leroy Tramp, T-R-A-M-P. I live out there, been out there right at 50 years. Okay. When we moved out there, we had a train tracks, it's been there for that long. Never, in 30 years, never waited for a train. Never. I can truthfully say on my hand on the Bible, we never waited for a train. So they put the elevator out there, and we didn't. You know, they promised when the elevator was coming in, they was going to have, it would have no problems. But this was Lincoln Grain. Now we're in the third elevator owner now. This is the third one. This is Cargill now. And we don't have any problem with Cargill. They have to get in there and they have to get out. But I was considering for the best for the county, for the quickest anyway, would be to put a line where they can do their switching to the far side, drive through, switch to the back. There's nothing for a mile and a half west. There's one road there, but there's another. If that person's blocked, he can go out the other way. There's no blockage out there. Instead of having all the blockage, when they block it, it's up by us, everything. And every time they come in, it's a half an hour. When the train comes in, and sometimes it's once a week, sometimes it's once every 2 weeks. It's not every other day or something like that. But then when it comes in, it goes out the next day. And it's one half an hour minimum when they come in. They cut it, they break it twice to come in. And then what if they get too long the train, then they have to, they block the entrance. Then they have to break it then. I mean, if somebody complains, they will break it. I've been up there two or three times at night especially to get and ask them to break it. And they don't like to. I don't understand that. But it's getting worse with all, and then we got the ethanol trains. And also we got the sideline when the track is coming by, west, or they bring it's usually a grain train, and they park it over there. And by the halfway between South Sioux and Jackson, I think they must have a double track where they park it. So that's half a train going out, a train go by. It isn't just once in a great while anymore. It's all the time. Last week, there's probably four, five in one day. So I mean, it's becoming a serious matter. It's not just a little inconvenience anymore. You know how many times you get out of the house and you're going to go somewhere? Pretty soon you look up there and there's a train. There's a half an hour, no matter what. Now, how many meetings that you fellas go to or anybody goes to, any place you plan on being somewhere, you can't be a half an hour ahead of time every time. So it's just getting worse. It's getting serious. And even the highway. You can't get on that highway. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you follow grain truck on that highway. I mean, it's just about impossible. So, you know, it's nice to have the industry. We got people working. That's the greatest thing that could be. But we don't have nothing for roads, or nothing's improving. We should have an overpass, or we should have something. And I just feel like they promised it to us when they built the elevator. That was one of the promises, but it was a verbal promise. But one of the commissioners, I don't remember which one, but I remember when we had so many meetings, and nothing happened. And I can understand it.
Okay, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you said they promised to do something about it,
have us a road. Right.
What, did they have a plan?
No, nope. There's never been a plan.
They just said they were going to do something, and then nobody did anything.
Right. Okay. Just like it's been going on for the last, I don't know how long that elevator's been out there, but I mean maybe 20, 15, 20 years.
Mr. Ellis, any questions? Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Is there anyone else who would like to address this issue? Okay, please. Again, your name, address, and spell your last name.
My name is Howard Gillespie. I'm with the Federal Railroad Administration. I'm out of Kansas City. I'm one of the grade crossing safety managers. And basically just a couple, some points of information. As far as block crossings go, there's not a federal regulation as far as trains blocking highway rail grade crossings. However, we do try, when we become aware of these issues, to work with the rail carriers using our good office. And when I say using our good office, there could be a variety of things just going on. And I just was listening to some of the comments earlier that we've had here, switching cars. You know, certainly it's a safety concern when a crossing is blocked for a long time for a variety of reasons. Already, one of the citizens mentioned about climbing through the cars. That's extremely dangerous. The train could move at any time. And certainly from a lot of other issues there with block crossings with respect to the community in terms of emergency response times. You know, we can go on with many things there. Other states have also had block crossing statutes, but they've had a hard time enforcing them also, and for a variety of reasons too. But as far as a federal preemption, in other words, you know, we go in with quote unquote fine or error, you know, we don't have that ability as far as the block crossing state statute. One thing that I would like to really mention just for the benefit of the group in talking about motorist impatience. You know, the big thing is we want to go somewhere, we want to get out and do whatever we need to do as citizens. And if the crossing is blocked, we don't realize it sometimes, but that builds our impatience. And this impatience, I would just challenge everybody here that whenever we approach a highway rail crossing, if we've been blocked in for, let's say, 2.5 hours a couple weeks ago, and I realize that's a terribly long time. But if we have these type of situations, that as we approach every highway rail crossing, though, that we refresh ourselves, and that we don't try to beat a train coming at us and get in a hurry, but we can make a bad decision with that. It's one thing to get held up by a train, but it's another thing where you have a situation where someone loses a loved one. And having been on all sides of that, I'm sure as civic authorities, it's not a good thing. We're here to save lives at highway rail crossings. I would also encourage one other thing. I went out and I looked at the crossing this afternoon, and you know, it has the 1-800 number on the crossing, and I'm just getting more information on the situation at hand, but I would highly encourage, you know, the first act would be to call that 1-800 number. It has a DOT number there on the crossing, and could get the railroad at least notified of that. Certainly in the future, in the future, certainly we'll be willing to work with the railroad to find out where the actual issue is. I mean, you mentioned it was switching cars. One of the things as far as railroad technology goes, they still have technology dating back well over 100 years ago with air brakes. And if you go to move a train or you have to release the brakes and pump the air up. And sometimes that can take a few minutes to get through that process. That's all I had. Questions?
Okay. I think it was a question back here. Would you please stand and give us your name, please?
My name's Adam Holmes, and I live at 1607 Erie Drive. Me and my wife were at the railroad crossing a couple weeks ago, and it was there for 2.5 hours. And we called that 1-800 number about 3 times, and it still sat there. Nobody bothered to do anything about it. There was a lady that worked for being in a van, and she knew it was going to be there for 2 hours. We call the Sheriff's Department, so the 1-800 number doesn't really work.
I'd be glad to get all that information from you.
I don't see the point of you saying that, because we already know that. I mean, we called it 3 times and within an hour and a half. Nobody bothered to come out and put anything about it. So, I mean, if there was an emergency, you know, what if somebody was dying? How's the ambulance supposed to get through there?
I totally understand.
And they were waiting for to go to the Sioux City yard. And if they knew it was going to be there for 2 hours, why didn't they split the train and tell
them?
What I'm saying is the 1-800 number doesn't work. We already know there's a 1-800 number there. I think everybody that lives out there called it.
Okay, thank you.
Sir, would you say that 1-800 number doesn't work? Is that, don't answer, or that...
They answer, but they don't
do anything.
Doesn't really do anything.
Thank you.
Let's wait, let's make sure everybody gets a chance for it, Mr. Church. Is there anybody else? Anyone else like to address this issue? Mrs. Church?
I just want to make a comment on the 800 number. Through the years, that 800 number has been called quite a few times. We end up getting Texas again. I mean, and I'm not saying they don't try and get a hold of somebody up here, but that's who we end up with. Texas or Kansas, why don't we get somebody here that can move it?
It's not speaking on behalf of the railroad, but railroads in general, the larger carriers such as the railroad here, they have their dispatching all centralized. That's pretty much it. All goes to a central policing dispersement out to the individual operating units, but I will take that into my notes and certainly get a little bill carried on.
Because one time, 10 years ago, it sat there for 7 hours that hasn't been brought up yet. 7 hours on that track. It just had to be moved 2 more cars. 7 hours they had to bring a locomotive out of O'Neill, Nebraska to move it. 7 hours. A long time. That was in February. It wasn't snow. There wasn't snow on the ground, but it was still... When you have snow, you're not going to get anywhere at all. And I'm saying people block outside trying to get in. People block inside trying to get out. Not just a one-way situation. And I don't know if you realize, that used to be Crystal Lake years ago. It was all lake. There was no highway there between Tyson and us. That was all country there. Years ago, there wasn't the traffic. then the grain elevator went in, we knew that was going to be a problem, and now we're getting more, and the railroad has to work with us. I mean, they either need a GPS to see that we're a, and back it up instead of pulling up to the highway and block us. Why can't they back it up? Simple as that.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My name is Nicole Mulcahy, M-U-L-C-A-H-Y, and I'm an attorney with the Nebraska Public Service Commission. I am a colleague of Mr. Elston's and Mr. Zandesi, who's also here from the State Commission. And we have very limited jurisdiction over the railroads. Most of what happens with the railroads has been preempted by the federal regulations, and you heard from Mr. Gillespie, who's with the FRA. And we were invited to come here today, and I wanted to make a few comments. There is a rule that's on the books currently with Nebraska. It's an old rule regarding blocking crossings. That's a 10-minute rule, 10 minutes after the time someone shows up and wants to cross. The problem with the situation is, what we see is, that the way that you would deal with that rule would be if the county or a homeowner were to file a complaint with the commission, it would then go to some type of administrative proceeding, an administrative court proceeding, if you will. And there would be a long process where that person would have to prosecute that, the railroad would have an opportunity to defend themselves, and the commissioners would be judicially in their judicial capacity. At that point, they would have discretion to determine if a fine was warranted and then issue one if they felt it was warranted in the evidence provided for such a thing. And at that point, it would be up to the railroad whether or not they would pay that, or they would challenge it in court whether or not the state has the ability to even issue such a fine or citation. And so I guess we wanted to come today just simply to let you know that we do have a regulation on the books. It has not been enforced for quite a while, and whether or not it would stand up to judicial challenge of it, we don't know. That would be a gamble, as if it's challenged in court, to know what a court might or might not do. So I guess we wanted to just let you know we were here and that we are concerned about the problem, and we, you know, are limited in our ability to do much for you folks. So.
The commission you're talking about is the Nebraska State Safety Commission?
The Nebraska Public Service Commission.
Public Service Commission, okay.
And at one point we were the Railway Commission quite a while ago.
Okay. So that's what, it would file it with you?
You could file it with us, or a homeowner could file it on their own behalf, and then it would be the situation where that person would have to prosecute it, and the railroad would have an opportunity to have their attorneys and defend against it. It would be like a similar to a court proceeding in front of the commission as a judicial.
In front of the commission.
And that could take significant amounts of time. I mean, it depends on how many things the attorneys want to go through. And then the commission would have the discretion to enter a fine if they found that a violation had in fact occurred. And at that point, you know, whether or not that would actually take care of the problem of your block crossing, that would be up for you to decide. But, you know, that we wanted to come today and tell you what we do have and what the opportunity would be, and just let you know that we...
Okay. Any questions on the board?
Well, if I understand you right, though, nobody's challenged this recently.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
And that would be like a 10-minute? They could block it for 10 minutes and then they got to move it, right?
The rule that I'm talking about would state that when someone comes and wants to cross a blocked crossing, they have 10 minutes from that point to have the crossing open for people to cross.
The crossing open?
Yes, okay. For them to be able to cross. And that's 10 minutes from the time someone shows up and wants to cross.
Okay.
That's what the rule says. And like I said, the rule is old and hasn't been enforced for a long time, and whether or not it would stand up to challenge at this point from what some of the other states have done, and they've tried to enforce similar provisions. It's kind of a gray area in the law right now, whether the court would find it's preempted by federal regulation, and we don't have the authority to do that, or whether we would have the authority to issue that type of a citation.
Okay.
Does that state statute mention any dollar amount as far as fines?
No, and it's a rule, and it does not. It would be within the commission's discretion to issue a citation if they felt one was warranted.
Okay.
Any other questions? From the public, question?
What I've observed is these trains are long enough, you can't see that engine. I mean, you're so far, you're almost a mile away, and it's on a corner. Kind of a curve up there past the highway, and I pulled up there before and you can't see him, and he can't see you. So I mean, you could say, well, you've been there 5-10 minutes. Nobody would never know, because nobody can see it unless you got a camera. I mean, I don't know how you could tell, because you can't see the engine anyway. And he can't see you. I've had to pull up in the middle. I come home one night late, and he was parked. He had the roadblock, and I pulled up, and I put, he was parked halfway between the highway and our road, P Avenue. And so I put the, turned the car sideways in the road with the headlights in his window. And he's sitting in the engine, and he opened, I walked up to the engine. He opened up his window, and I said, "You're blocking the road." He said, "Oh." That's all he said. And he, then he went back and cranked it around a little bit. He got it open. He backed up. All he had to do was back up. But he didn't know that. And I don't know. I think it's a lot of it's because they're not telling them over here where they're. I think it's mostly people from out of town. I don't think it's our local people as much as it is from all the way across the country. This is my opinion.
So, okay. Thank you.
I don't think they do it intentionally. I mean, I really don't.
You're talking about the conductor of the train?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Please.
My name is Peggy Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. I live at 522 Eagle Drive.
Okay, now one question. Are your questions directed to this board or to the people in the back?
I think to the board.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'd like to go back to our original, what the whole problem is. We only have one way out. I understand you can't control the railroad. Evidently the state can, maybe, or can't. The federal may or may not be able to. Our problem is we need another road out. Does this board have any control over getting us a board, or should we just go pound sand?
I don't think I can answer that. Anyone on the board wish to address that? Oh, don't go away.
No.
Somebody else may have a suggestion.
Pardon?
I just said I don't. Somebody else might have. Anyone else want to address that?
Is that any thing like that?
Well, I don't know if you're aware or not, but what, Bill, 2 or 3 years ago we set up a committee to look at just that proposal as an alternate route to get in and out of there. Bill Church, myself, Fred Kellogg, our road director, I think Larry Albanicious and Marty Hohenstein were on this committee. We met several times to look at alternative routes and never came up with a solution. Well, I mean, we did try. We tried to get landowners involved. To donate some land so we could build a road across there. I'm not saying that we...
You don't have the authority to say
we have
we're going to take your land?
We have the power of eminent domain, yes. We would like to have done it on a voluntary basis.
Well, sure, but 3 years and you haven't, so...
I'm not saying it's impossible. Anything's possible.
Well, you like they said, when they put the... I'm sorry, I had surgery today. When they put the rail or the... elevator in, we were promised verbally.
I understand that.
Well, that's been over 30 years ago. How long does it take to do something?
That's a question I can't
answer. You're aware of the problem.
I think we're all aware of that.
If somebody can't get out, fire department can't get in, you're kind of in a pickle. Because you can't say, oh, we didn't know. We'll look into it now.
I think this board's well aware of it. Thank you. Very definitely. However, I don't think this board has a solution.
Well, I have a problem with that. After all these years, you haven't came up, not you personally.
I understand.
You haven't been on the board for 30 years.
I understand.
But that a solution hasn't been.
I understand.
I'm getting my Irish up. I'm sorry.
Up here, sir. Name, address, and spell your last name, please.
William Church, C-H-U-R-C-H, and I live at Mellis Beach, 529 Eagle Drive. Yes, Bill, I'm addressing Bill right now. We did, and the board, we did have a little session going on trying to find a solution to where the road would, where we could possibly put another road. We run into two and Bill mentioned their names. There's an Albanacious and a Homestead. Yep, the two blockage for where the road may go. Larry said absolutely nothing. No. Because he does have some kind of a contract. I don't know if it's a contract, but he's got a business back there. He's building houses back there in North Shore area. Directly behind me is where, on my north end, my property, is where Larry starts and I start. He's on the north end and I'm on the south, the Mills Beach area. He has got roads built back there, and he's built them in the lake bed. And they're good, solid roads, but with his, between his business and the housing, now it's a housing association to where the public cannot go through unless, you know, gave him permission. Larry said, where I had suggested a road to go through to come out, that's another part of his eventual project of taking the sand, whatever, out of the lake. And then with Holmstein, there's property, a property line that runs directly east. If you're acquainted with Joe Max, it'd be just about where their gate goes in. And there's a property line. Bill and I, we looked at it, and go right straight down east to the four-lane highway, 77. But you wouldn't, we can't make a road, you know, connecting road to the four-lane. But as you got down to the very east end, you could turn north, and would be on the north, and be on the east side of that little lake that Holmstein's got, and come out at North Shore. It's the shortest route there is. But the problem is, you need to get the land to do it. As far as that long stretch between two pieces of property, you know, either one of them wouldn't lose that much ground. I mean, it'd be very simple. And I don't know. We worked on it for a while, and the agreements never came up on where we could do it. The last one was get a key from the elevator, and then for emergency purposes, they could have, because that's all gated off. We're on the west end of the grain elevator, and right at our road where we go out of Mills Beach. So that's as far as for the public itself, the people that live down there, there's no access. But it's supposed to be for the fire department and rescue. I've never seen it used yet, and thank God it hasn't. But we need a road. Just forget about the railroad, because there's nothing we're going to be able to do if you try to even, like what was said a few minutes ago, you're going to end up with lawsuits with the railroad, federal, this and that. I mean, that's just a long, drawn-out nothing. We've got to acquire land to build this road. And I'm not talking about going west, because if you go west, all you're doing is you just want to wait for the train to come. Because you're adding on about another 3 or 4 miles. So that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Yeah. Anyone else on this issue who wants to cover something that hasn't already been covered?
My name is Scott Elston. I'm Railroad Safety Inspector with Public Service Commission.
I don't know if everybody can hear you. Can everybody hear? Anybody can't hear him? Okay, you're good to go.
There's just a couple things I'd like to clarify, and it goes with the last couple of citizens who were up here. And it has to do with your issue of the road. I believe that that would be a good, logical way to get around this, because the railroad, even if they're there at that crossing and they're switching, they're making train movements and they're doing their job, they're not just parked waiting for another crew, they can still block that crossing indefinitely. If they go into emergency or have a problem with the train, once again, indefinitely, they can block that crossing. So whether you have an issue to get in or out of there in an emergency situation, you're still at the railroad's mercy on being able to get in there. And if they can't see you, they're under no obligation to move out of the way. Another issue would be, we get a lot of complaints on crossings all over the state of Nebraska. It is our largest complaint. And normally what we will do is we'll talk to the railroads just one-on-one, and we'll try to get a solution to the situation as best we can. Sometimes we're successful, other times for a while, and then you have to remind them. But, you know, you can feel free to call the Public Service Commission. We're not a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation, because we're very small. But you can leave a message. We're not going to get the crossing cleared for you right now so you can go. You're still going to wait your 2 hours or whatever. But we then can contact the railroad and try to keep that from happening in the future. So this problem, it's only going to grow. The number of trains in this country, the amount of cars that are on a train is growing all the time. There's no regulations to limit the number of cars that they'll put on a train. So, like I say, this issue is just going to continue to grow. So the road, an alternate road to get in and out of there for your community seems like it would be a wise choice. You know, they do have devices on the train which they can measure the length of it. The engineer and conductor are required to know the length of that train. But with the highway so close and the train lengths getting longer, the accuracy of those devices, it's going to be, you know, you're always going to have a problem with that. If there's any questions about anything like that.
Any questions? Apparently not.
I've got it.
I'm sorry.
You work with the railroad quite often, I'm sure.
Daily.
Would it be, could we approach the railroad and say, they have a huge right-of-way out there, probably 100, 150 foot wide. Would we be able to approach the railroad and say, could we make a frontage road in your right-of-way? Would that even be possible? Would it be something they would consider? We'd get off private?
You could discuss it with them.
I think someone has in the past, one of our, you know, maybe, I think Randy Crumby, 8 or 10 years ago, had tried to approach him. I don't recall if he got anything done or not. That was kind of before my time on the board.
The problem with that is the liability for the railroad.
I understand.
They don't want, you know, they're trying to close more crossings to lower the risk for that liability. And to get onto their property, I would say it would be a tough fight.
Okay. I didn't know if that was a road we wanted to pursue or not. But
I mean, you could try. I'm just saying that, you know, liability issues would, they would probably frown upon that. But feel free to try.
Okay.
It's worth the effort.
Other questions?
Yes, but the same question I was going to ask. No,
okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
There's only one other thing that I'd like to say, and that I heard, and Howard Gillespie touched on this too. And there was somebody that crawled over the cars to get to the other side. I would highly discourage that for safety reasons, obviously, but it is also trespassing on railroad property. So, you know, you're not presenting yourself well to the railroad when they find out about things like that. They will want to stop that, and for good reason. because it's just too dangerous. People don't understand, you know, how the railroad works, and there's, it's, just don't do it.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, I'd like to point out that we received a letter from Bridget Holmes. All members received a copy. Would like to point that out. Okay. If there's nothing else on this issue, I think we'll move on. I would like to thank the lady and the gentleman for taking time out to come up here and hear our issue. Of course, we didn't reach a solution, but I think we'll work on that a little more. Thank you very much. Before we close this issue, if there's anybody in here that has or was willing to write out incidents and times that you were not able to cross that or you were blocked out, and for how long, date, time, and you can write that up and sign it for me and get it to me, I will send a letter. Now, I'm not saying it's going to do any good, but I will be happy to send a letter on behalf of the county to Jeff Fortenberry, Ben Nelson, and to Mike Johans, and explain what our problem is and ask if there's anything they can do to help us reach a solution. I'm not going to say we're going to get anything. I'm only going to say it's another avenue to approach. Maybe our legislators can do something with the railroad is on the national level. So if you'll get that to Joan, and Joan will then make it available to me, I will see to it that our legislators are informed of our problem and see if they can come to a solution for us. Okay? Anything else on this issue before I go on? Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to move on now. Kara Oregon, is she here? Kara is going to talk to us about wellness recommendations.
I'm Kira Oregon with Mercy Business Health Services. Hopefully you've all received a couple of documents from Joan indicating a summary of our recent findings from the voluntary wellness screening that was offered this past June to Dakota County employees. I want to thank you for supporting and offering that wellness screening. It was a great first step towards helping employees achieve better health and well-being, and also hopefully on down the road impacting things like healthcare costs. So, wanted to just point out a couple highlights from that wellness screening. It was a great opportunity to gather some data and provide a roadmap for where to head the wellness program in the future. There were 37 employees that participated, and that's a great start for a voluntary wellness screening. So thanks for doing that. A couple other successes outlined. A pretty significant number of the participants currently are physically active, and a great overall motor vehicle safety score. So in other words, people, you know, wearing their seat belts as they should, and not driving while impaired. So several opportunities for improvement were outlined, including opportunities for improving physical activity, nutrition, weight management, certainly some areas for improvement with that, helping to lower diabetes risk. That came out with a bit of a red flag there, and also looking at blood pressure. So those were a few of the opportunities for improvement that we discovered. A couple others are making sure that gender-specific screenings are continued. So making sure male participants receive a prostate-specific antigen test, blood test, for looking at the shortages of prostate cancer, and making sure female employees with the county are getting periodic mammograms. So those were a couple of the opportunities for improvement. There was also a significant number of the participants that reported using tobacco. So helping those employees to quit tobacco is another opportunity for improvement on down the road. Also, with Mercy, we did make some recommendations for the next year. One of the enhancements is that the Dakota County will receive up to 3 complimentary health seminars that will help coordinate and provide and selected those on topics of need. The other thing we're starting with is quarterly health coaching, that being an opportunity to sit with people one-on-one for a brief consultation, if you will, on, you know, what are their health goals or health needs, and helping them move forward with that. So those are actually going to be coming up here in September. So we've got that as well. Of course, promoting tobacco cessation opportunities so people are aware of what's available in the community, both for free resources as well as low-cost sources to help with that as well. Our final recommendation is to form a countywide wellness committee. And the purpose of this group would be to meet and discuss what are the needs as well as the wants of the employees when it comes to their health and well-being and how to best get those programs delivered to them. So helping with the promotion, some of the planning, and like I said, just getting out there and really being kind of cheerleaders for the different departments. And typically those with this type of entity are set up with representatives from secondary roads, law enforcement, public works, courthouse, and so on. So that was our final. And typically a group like that will meet on a monthly basis, at least 10 times a year. There might be 2 months out of the year when it's not as necessary, one of the summer months, perhaps December. But otherwise, having that be a regularly scheduled meeting, and certainly that's something that Wake Mercy can help facilitate and get started. So once again, really appreciate the support of starting this initiative. We're off to a great start with the data we've collected. Certainly hope to increase participation moving forward. The more people we have to participate, the greater the opportunity for health improvements. Questions?
Okay, questions?
Comment. I was one of the 37 participants, and I'm really pleased that information will, that you give us. When I got my results, I'm very happy that, how the result, which is up to me. But I really encourage all the county employees, to participate in that. I think it's good for all of us, and it's good for the for themselves more than anything else, and the community as well, and it's good for the county. I mean, it's the county employees because we might lower our insurance premium, and so I would recommend it, and I really like it, and I'm one of the 37 participants, and I think it's a great program. I really like it.
I hope
more people will
participate.
Other questions? I'm just
taking
question?
I don't have any.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving to the next item is the budget hearing. The purpose is a hearing to support opposition and criticism, suggestions, and observations of taxpayers relating to the 2010-11 proposed county budget. So Joan, could you give us a rundown on the budget, please, so for the information.
The budget has been in the county clerk's office for the past week for any public to review it and have any questions. We have changed our tax request. The tax levy has increased, not by much, by 0.002205, which would be a $2.21 increase on a $100,000 home. Some of the challenges that we were faced with was LB 121 asking the county to take back the estate assessor's office. That added $86,250 for an estimate of 25% of their cost. We have the Avenue paving project bond payment of $65,000. Legal services budget increased about $50,000 over last year's expenditures because of some of the trials that we've had. Our beginning cash balance was $565,000 less than what it was last year. Part of that was due to the winter storm and spring flooding disaster cost, and federal prisoner boarding was also about $500,000 less than what we did in 2008-2009 in income. Department heads were asked to offer budget cuts to their previously proposed request and hold pay increases to 2.5%.
Okay, this is the budget before us. We'll move down to people that would like to address the board in favor of this budget? I know not too many people are willing to come forward and say they want their taxes raised. I understand that. But this is a slight increase. Anyone that would like to speak in favor? Okay, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in opposition to the budget? Seeing no one come forward, is there anyone that would like to speak in a neutral position, neither for nor against?
My name is Dennis Ryan. I live at 729 200 Street. One question that I have, that you just mentioned something about extra expenditures for the last winter, so on and so forth. No mention was mentioned about FEMA money. Didn't we apply for some of that? Did we ever get any? Nobody said anything about getting money, let alone how much.
Mr. Kellogg, would you care to answer that question?
Yes, we have applied for it, but we had, I think of right now, $880,000 has been approved by FEMA, but we have not received any of it. So it's pretty hard to say you have it. We have applied for flooding. They have signed claims for $31,000, but yet we have not seen any of that.
You said 80 or 800,000, what was it?
81.
And then another 30, but no sign of anything. Have you checked with the other counties, see how they're faring?
Yes, I have. And it's the same way. And I've talked to other counties that have been involved with FEMA before. It is not a fast process. They had one superintendent. He suggested that you actually put funds out of your inheritance tax in your budget for things like this because FEMA is so slow. Whether you want to do that with our budget or if it's even possible, I don't know. But FEMA is not a very fast process.
Okay. I have checked with other governmental agencies about the FEMA payment. They have not received theirs either. There seems to be a consistent problem with the fact that they have changed people in charge of it at least four times, and each person as they change has not accepted what the other person had. It's been 8 months now and we still haven't received the FEMA money. And our people have spent an awful lot of time on it.
A follow-up question. How much did we apply for, and I think I heard what we might get. How much did we apply for?
Well, the snowstorm event, they only allowed you a 48-hour period, your worst 48-hour period during the snowstorm. And as you know, the snowstorm lasts a little bit longer than 48 hours, so we're a little short there. It was $208,000 to start out with the flooding, and like I said, it was down to $31,000.
It's down to what now?
$31,000. Out of that $208,000 that we first started at.
That's about, what, 15% of what it was started out to be?
Yeah.
And that's synonymous with the other counties then, apparently?
Pretty much.
And I think we'll be lucky to get that.
Yes.
Personal comment. Anyone else that would like to address the budget on a neutral position? All right, we will now close the hearing and we'll move to a motion to approve increasing the base restricted funds by an additional 1%.
I would move to increase the base restricted funds by an additional 1%, which amounts to $47,286.14.
Seconded.
Motion made and seconded to increase 1%. Questions from the board? In this case, any questions from the public? Call roll.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes. Now we need a motion to adopt and approve Resolution 10C16. Adopting 2010-11 Dakota County budget.
So move to adopt it 10C-016 for 2010-11 Dakota County budget.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the budget. Questions on the budget? Comments? From the public? Call roll.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
Okay, then we have here Resolution 10C17, setting the 2010-11 property tax requested. I can't even read the figure. Well, setting the tax request at $5,303,690.55. I'm neglected here. I'm moving too fast. We need another public hearing, and this public hearing is for the purpose of hearing support, opposition, and criticism, suggestions for observation of taxpayers relating to setting the final tax budget at $5,303,690.55. So that is what is before us. Is there anyone that would like to speak in favor of adopting this budget? Anyone that would like to speak in opposition? Anyone that would like to speak in a neutral position? We will close the hearing, and now I will call for a motion to for Resolution 10C17, setting the property tax request at $5,303,690.55.
So moved. Set the resolution 10C-017, setting the 2010-11 property tax request at $5,303,690.55.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to adopt the budget. Questions on the budget from the board? Questions from the audience? Call roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Moving to Mr. Kellogg, County Road Director, will talk to the board about buy and recycle policy resolution.
Yes, I'm asking the board to adopt a buy-recycle policy. This helps in our grant making. We've had a couple grants that we've used, South Sioux, so we decided the county should come up with their own. County attorney has came up with the wording and legal. And we have one here asking the board if they would adopt a buy-recycle policy for grant making.
Okay, Resolution 10C018, resolution regarding buying recycled policy for Dakota County, Nebraska. Whereas it is the policy of Dakota County to be a leader in the recycling effort, and whereas Dakota County shall continue abiding by statutory abiding requirements related to obtaining bids, quotes, from area suppliers, and whereas it is the desire of Dakota County to encourage the use of recycled materials and will strive to continually increase the percentage, type, and variety of total annual purchases of products, materials, and supplies manufactured or produced from post-consumer material, and whereas Dakota County actively pursues the purchase of recycled materials for the county's own use, and whereas Dakota County wishes to establish the following policy for buying recycled materials for all departments and administrative offices. Paper purchase shall require a minimum of 10% recycled material, of which 10% shall be post-consumer waste. Deviation from this requirement must be approved by department heads, and tires purchased shall include the purchasing of retread tires where feasible, and other purchases of the county will be considered recycled materials in the bidding process when available. Therefore, be it resolved by the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, hereby approve the above buy recycling policy, and the county board members and the clerk are authorized to sign the same. What is your pleasure?
I would move to approve the resolution 10C-019, and the bi-recycle policy.
And give the chair permission to sign.
018 down below in solid waste study.
And I'll sign it then.
And authorize the chair to sign.
Yeah.
And chair and vice chair.
I second it.
I say, motion made and seconded to adopt resolution 10C018.
19.
19? I got 18 on my sheet.
Oh, it's 19?
I got 182. Well, that's better. It's
19. There are two resolutions, right?
Oh, is this?
I have 18.
Okay.
I'm on 18.
Okay.
Which are we working on?
If the Dakota County Solid Waste Study is 18, then this will be 19.
Oh.
Either way, those.
We're doing 19 before 18 then?
Yep.
Okay, it's 019. Okay. You get to make that correction, Danny?
Got it.
Thank you.
019.
019. Questions from the board? From the public? Call roll.
McLarty?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Fred. Moving now to Sally.
Fred and I are the green team today. KNB has completed the solid waste management study. We did this so that when the county is writing an environmental grant, you can honestly say we have a current solid waste management plan. We also did it because it needed to be done. In 1994, the term e-waste hadn't been coined yet. No one ever dreamed that we would all throw out our televisions all at once. Methane recapture has totally changed the way we're looking at biodegradable waste. So really, your solid waste management plan needs to be a dynamic plan. So we will be continuing to review the plan every year, at least until we find out what the federal government has in mind for a sequel. So we're asking that the board pass a resolution adopting the study.
I would move to approve resolution 10C-018 and the Dakota County Solid Waste Study.
Seconded.
And authorize the chair and vice chair to sign.
Now, I heard a second.
Yeah, I did.
Motion made and seconded to adopt 10C-18. Questions from the board? Public? Call roll.
Brody?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you, Sally.
Thanks, Sally.
Moving to miscellaneous items, GPS for county vehicles and equipment.
I see Jesse's here, but I talked to Rick Boskay before the meeting. He was the one that kind of got the ball rolling on this issue. I asked him if he wanted us to wait till he returned in 2 weeks. He didn't think that was necessary. I think it's time to take action. I think it's a great program. The sooner the better. We've allocated money in our budgets, and the jail budget, sheriff's budget, and road budget added monies into the fuel lines. Our thoughts were there that these would decrease our fuel cost. And I would move that we would go ahead with the GPS units in all three departments, the sheriff, jail, and road. Numbers to be determined later. There are probably some vehicles that don't require these units, although I think the more units we get in, the more efficient and the more accountability we have. And I think roughly we'll be looking at about 13 sheriff units, probably one jail unit, and roughly 10 to 12 road units. We'd like to work this out with Fred, but at least get all the maintainers, a couple pickups, and maybe a road gravel truck or two. Now, they are transferable in the road department. When these gravel trucks park in the wintertime, we can transfer these units to the snow units. We have a one-way blade, and we have a front-end loader that's used in the wintertime. So those two will be transferable. So roughly 13, I think, for the sheriff, one for the jail, and probably a dozen for the road department.
15 for the sheriff department.
15? There might be a couple units that we may not think that are necessary, Randy, looking them over.
That's only have, that's up to...
Right, we talked about that, but, and maybe we can increase that, but I don't, there was a couple of those we didn't think that were necessary, just...
Will there be a particular commissioner then that Rod or Jim should contact?
Well, I think, I really think since Rick started this process, I think, probably let him finish it. And I think he'll be back this week.
Yeah.
But I would make that motion that we would authorize these GPS units for the sheriff's department, jail, and road.
Total of 26 units. Is that what you say? Or you said number to be determined.
I think we need to leave that open.
Okay.
Leave that number open.
10 to 12. I second the motion.
Motion made and seconded to approve the use of GPS units in county vehicles and the number to be determined later. Questions from the board? Questions from the public? Okay, I would point out that one of the big reasons behind this is we have people who say they haven't received the service. By using GPSs, we'll be able to track where that unit has gone over the past 90 days, and we'll be able to justify to the public where they are actually getting the services they think they're not getting. And that's one of the big reasons behind these purchases. That has to do with the road department, sheriff's department. They say nobody's ever been on this road, nobody's doing this. We can then go back and show accountability where that is in fact happening and justify what we're doing or what our departments are doing. That's one of the big driving points behind this. Any other no questions? Then call a roll.
Let's see. Okay, McNear?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
Next item is to award bid on the lease purchase. This has to do with the tractor, loader, backhoe.
Yes, after talking with the road committee, we decided to go with the low bid from Murphy Tractor, the John Deere, at $43,462.
Okay.
I would move that we go with the Murphy equipment with the John Deere backhoe lease purchase.
I second it.
Motion made and seconded to accept the recommendation of the road department, and that's to go with Murphy Tractor. Questions from the board? Public? Call a roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
McNear?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Red.
Approve payroll claims? There's no problem with it, with payroll.
I move to approve the payroll claims as submitted.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve payroll. Call a roll, please.
McLarty?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
McNear?
Yeah.
Gomez?
Yes.
Accounts payable, I didn't see any, Joan, did you?
No.
Accounts payable? No.
Motion
accepted. Officials reports, do we have any of that?
No.
Okay. Road and bridge signage report.
I put that on there. I had a lot of phone calls. What they're really worried about is, I had some guys call me that's got semis. And what they're saying is, they start down a road, and they get to a bridge, and with a semi-load or freight truck even, and they get to it, and they got a 3-ton, a 5-ton, a 6-ton. Well, then they got to back all the way out. And they were just wondering, the one guy in particular was wondering, if there was any kind of a chance that, say, you get to a crossroad, and we could put up, like, a 5-ton limit ahead. So that means that trucker has to go a different route. Instead of getting down a half a mile or three-quarters mile, then have to back all the way out. Because like they said, 90% of the time you can't get turned around. And I was just wondering, he brought it to me, and I said I'd bring it to the board to see what they thought about it. see what we can work out on it, or what? Because everything now, like they say, is semis or, you know, bigger trucks out here.
After talking to Dick about this and thinking about it, I'm wondering, is it possible for us to put that signage at the last crossroad before the bridge?
Well, anything to let them know, you know.
No, that's what I'm wondering. If we could put it in that, wherever that cross section is, then it would make it easy. Then they would see it before they drive all that distance to the bridge.
As of right now, there's not a state statute that states that you have to have a sign at an intersection just at the bridge to state the tonnage of the bridge. Most of the farmers know where they're, you know, what tonnage is on each bridge. I didn't realize that there was that many truckers out there that didn't know the tonnage on the bridge. Usually it's a local thing. There's not too many truckers from out of town that are finding these three-ton bridges. I ain't saying it never happens, but they don't even, I looked up in the sign inventory, they do not even make a sign, three-ton bridge ahead or something like that. It's something you would have to go to make, have a sign company make for you. I don't know how many intersections you want to do. If you want to do it on all bridges less than 20 ton, you know, I wasn't even aware of it until I looked at it.
I have no idea.
Well, it was brought to me. I was called on it because there was a guy from Wakefield called another guy, and this guy, and he told him to call me. And he said that he had a semi, and he said, I backed my semi 3/4 mile. Because he said there was no place to get turned around, and I had a load on, and he said, I didn't want to cross the bridge. I knew I had way too much to go across the bridge. And I said, okay, I'll bring it up, see what the deal is.
All I know is there's not a state statute that you have to state where there is. I did look that
up. How many bridges in the county, Fred, do we have that, say, we'll say 11 ton or less?
That I couldn't tell you. I know we have 52 bridges in the county. I can tell you that. But how many of them 52, I don't know.
Okay.
What's on?
I can find out.
Would you want to... Would it be possible for him to get with Arnie, our bridge inspector, and maybe Leon, our sign man, and research that a little bit?
Yeah, we should do something because, you know, if we know we're going to... Fall's coming on now and...
Harvest time?
Yeah.
Well, let's find out how many...
Would it be possible for you to determine how many bridges that would involve and how many signs and the cost of the sign?
Not a problem.
And get back to us in 2 weeks?
Oh, not a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we'll do.
Thanks, great idea.
I'll try and find out the cost of signs by then also.
Okay. Yeah.
And if there's any other state or... I've only talked to one person from the state. They haven't heard of any other county adopting a policy, but okay. I will look into that too. He's looking into that if there's other counties that's got a policy that covers a situation like this. So if I find something, I like that.
Okay. We're just looking at ballpark figures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. All the office inventories have been filed with the board, and what we need now is a committee to check the inventories, to review them and check them. Do I have volunteers from the board to serve on that committee?
I think Rick Bolsky would love to be on that committee.
Yeah. Yes,
he does.
I'll right teach him to miss meetings, right?
How many volunteers they need?
Do we need a special committee for it?
He'd done it before, and Rick.
How many you need?
Who's on the building committee?
Tony myself.
Well, that didn't work.
Thank God.
They did.
I'm on everything else.
We did like
Ted.
You have a property committee.
Yeah. Who's on the property committee?
Tony and I.
Yeah, there's two of them.
Tony and I.
Sorry, Bill. I didn't say anything.
We'll do it.
Okay,
all right, Tony.
Yes.
We'll just refer to the property committee and let them work on it. Okay. Commissioner reports.
No, you already get the
committee. Hearing none. Member reports.
It's not a report. I just want to let you know that September 11,
we're going to celebrate it, not celebrate it, the Remedial Heroes, they give us liberty in Mexico 200 years ago, so, and as well, we're going to remember the victims of 2011, on September 11, we'll have the parade of Decorado Avenue at 1 o'clock, and then follow up, we have a program at the Old Crystal Lake Park, so everybody's welcome, and I think it's a good occasion to remember the people that died for us. Thank you.
Where's this going to be?
It's going to be September 11.
No, where?
The parade going to be in Dakota Avenue from 12th Street to the 29th.
In South Sioux, okay.
In South Sioux, that's correct.
All right. Anything else? All right, public comment. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the board on any issue that was not on the agenda?
Two items. Kenny Baker, Brady.
I'm going to hold you to that.
I'm sorry. Dennis Ryan, Dakota County, 729 200 Street. Kenny Baker Bridge, is that going to open this
it's
year
open.
Next? Is it open?
We had a ribbon cutting, what, a week
and,
ago?
And yeah. G Avenue, is that ever going to open?
Yeah, when it's finished.
What happened to the nine-day deal or something?
Okay, is there anyone
they
else?
They actually finished up on G Avenue today. It's being graveled right now.
Okay.
Anyone else? Any issue that was not on the agenda? Seeing nobody approach, then entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Seconded.
Motion made and seconded to adjourn. Call a roll.
Rudy.
Yes.
McNear.
Yes.
Goldman.
Yes.
McClary.
Okay, thank you. We are adjourned.
We are adjourned.
We need more meetings here.
I don't want to give this to Danny.
Are you on the road?